fellow baseball nuts, and a big warm welcome to episode 23 of the Johnny and Josh Show, so named despite the fact that JC can't be with us this week, again attempting to qualify for an Olympic qualifier, a qualifier for a qualifier. Thankfully right. For me, I got Big Dave and Eric joining me on the show. Welcome, boys.
Hi, everybody.
How you doing?
Dave, we've had a bit of feedback from many of our listeners, particularly the ones that are in regular communication with me. Saying,
they want Josh back immediately.
No, they were just saying, with regards to your good self last week, buddy, they were saying, whatever he's on, I want some of it. So,
I'll take whatever I was on last week. I don't feel as good right now. But that's nothing like you, Johnny. Johnny, you do not have COVID. Let's be clear. You have the flu. You've tested negative for COVID.
I'm double vaxxed, and we'll be coming onto that in a second.
So, and you may notice Johnny he sounds like he has a little bit of mucus. He has a little
I'm not feeling well, buddy. No, but I had a really tough week. As you know, things have been a bit tough in my world from an employment perspective.
Absolutely.
But I had two jobs on Thursday, two jobs on Friday, which doubles my tally of work for the previous 19 months. So that's pretty exciting.
You're on the up, kiddo.
But as you know, being with you guys is the best tonic for any illness. And I'm going to give you our usual biblical reference just to put you all in the spirit of things. Although the Old Testament is unspecific, it is held that Adam and Eve had 23 daughters. Now, that tells you something, doesn't it? That's right. Apparently.
I didn't know that.
And the 23rd.
That's a long time pregnant. Have you calculated how many months that is to be? Who's the wife? Who's the mom?
Well, I was about to say, given the origins of humanity, supposedly according to the Old Testament, that Adam and Eve obviously were the father and mother of humanity, I'm assuming they must have had some sons as well, because certainly from a biological perspective. Anyway, it's not even worth considering. Let's move on, Johnny.
I think there's some holes in this story.
Absolutely. I think we may find what we've been told.
Did they all have belly buttons?
Better to ask fewer questions, I think.
did they all have belly buttons? That's the thing.
Let's not go there. Anyway, well, let's talk more baseball in terms of the number 23, more baseball specific. And there are, of course, four 23s that have had their number retired, one of whom is going into the Hall of Fame in 3 days' time, Mr. Ted Simmons.
That's right. But another one of those names that you failed to mention, which one of them is Willie Horton, who wore 23.
You love Willie Horton.
Oh, well, you love him because he's a Tiger.
He's a Tiger. But not only that, not just because he's a Tiger, but did you know that in 1967, unfortunately, there were some race riots in Detroit. And the Willie Horton, who was actually a Detroit native as well, he ran down to the site of the riots on 12th Street, and in full Tiger uniform, he put on his entire Tiger uniform, stood on top of a burnt out car and tried to calm down the protesters and rioters from burning down the city. It worked for one day. Sadly, the riots continued, but for a fleeting moment, Willie Horton in a full Detroit Tigers uniform managed to placate a raging crowd.
But, pretty brave.
There was a famous documentary HBO called City on Fire, which if you can find online somewhere, I recommend you watch.
Interesting. Right. Interesting.
And are there 23s, Johnny, of note?
Yes, Don Mattingly, Yankee legend. Number retired back in August 1997. Which, of course, was the first season of Channel 5 Baseball, which you weren't involved in, Dave. But, Eric, were you in the background at SNB in 97?
I came soon afterwards after complaining about the coverage.
That's how I got on. I said, that Josh is terrible. you need a real host. Don Mattingly's claim to fame is he's probably the most decorated Yankee that never won anything, I would say, if you had to look. And soon to be Aaron Judge. That will soon be his title to have. When he doesn't win anything, he'll be like the next greatest Yankee.
Wow, Dave. I mean, after your rant, which, by the way, is the topic of reference in the mailbag at the end of the show.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you are not scared to shoot those bullets off again.
Oh, I got a lot of bullets here. They're just rubber because I don't want to really hurt anybody.
Well, no one would guess that you're a Mets fan, considering your ongoing rant against the
it's
Yankees.
It's not like I was ever fired by the Yankees or anything. It's no big deal. I'm not like bitter.
No, just Channel 5. Oh, no, no. Yeah. No, that's not right. Yeah. The only other name we haven't mentioned, Notables 23 is retired, Ryan Sandberg from the Cubs.
Rhino. He's another guy who was great who never won anything.
That's true. And who actually doing when his contract was up, he was good enough to the Cubs, said, just pay me what you can afford. And you won't see that nowadays. And
yeah, how did that go? All right, we here's 50 cents.
Yeah.
Well, you know, Ted Simmons also did not win a World Series title.
That's right. More than so
he got within a game. We'll talk about that later, I think.
Yeah.
We will indeed, as that will be one of our topics of discussion, and that is, of course, the Hall of Fame inductions. Talking of the Hall of Fame, guys, as we move into COVID update, really sad news, and there's a lot of bad news on the COVID front at the moment, but Johnny Bench tested positive and therefore will not be attending the Hall of Fame. And, of course, the ceremony is on Wednesday, the 8th,
September, and that's the thing. Every single Hall of Famer, a living legend, who's been inducted into Cooperstown, always goes to the induction ceremony. But they'll be without Johnny Bench, who hopefully will get better. Apparently he's only tested positive. No one knows if he's ailing or not, or in the same condition as Johnny is.
Talking of testing positive, Eric, I mean, the Red Sox are an absolute shambles. They have the least amount of players vax, and guess what? They've pretty much got the most number of players testing positive. Surprise, surprise. Wow.
Actually, as of just a few hours ago, the 11th player got tested positive. Somehow they're still winning, despite, you know, half their squad.
It's look, as they say in sports cliche world, it's the next man up mentality. You know, everybody rally around. You got your players out. They don't.
I'll be honest with you, because we're talking about this specifically about being vaccinated, etc. It's astounded me now that I'm out there from a work perspective. I've been in conversation with people of my own generation who are not getting vaxxed, who are telling me, you know, who are basically going down the whole conspiracy theory route as well. And this is of my generation. You know, I've assumed that this lack of take-up is predominantly amongst younger people. And yet it would be, you know, Bob Boone has just stepped down, for instance, as Nats GM. Rather than get facts, he's resigned as general manager of the Nationals.
That's right, vice president, actually. Yeah, I think he was GM, now he's vice president. Yeah, my fault. That I should have.
Thank you for that.
Start from the beginning.
Well, hang on a second. His son Aaron Boone has a heart condition and he's vaccinated. So, what is going on in that family? What's Thanksgiving like? Have Thanksgiving?
Well, there's going to be healthy debate, but it amazes me. It amazes me that we're still going down this route. And it's actually led to some pretty upsetting situation for any Giants fan. You've got this story. I don't know if you both saw it.
This is a bad story.
Yeah, the concession staff at Giants Stadium have voted, I think, something like 97% to go on strike.
96.7.
Okay,
96.7. Sounds like a radio station, okay. But it's actually the percentage.
Right. Of all concession workers at Oracle Park, the home of the San Francisco Giants, have voted to strike for safety and healthcare and hazard pay because apparently at least 20 of their workers have been infected with COVID since the stadium reopened.
Yeah. And Bon Appetit management and the Giant approach to workers and fan safety during this latest surge of COVID-19 is completely inadequate and dangerously irresponsible, says Anand Singh, who's the president of a local two out there, according to San Francisco Gate. And that's a disgrace. And, you know, the Giants, I believe during the pandemic, the Giants gave every worker $500 to try to help them out, which, you know, turns out to be about $500,000, which I guess is nice, but it's probably not enough considering that the owners are billionaires. And when you take a look at Bay Area baseball and you consider the mess that was the Oakland A's minor league food situation, remember that when they were getting like a can of SpaghettiOs and an old apple for lunch and dinner, it's not looking good out there in San Francisco. and in the Bay Area, we'll say.
While we move this story north of the border for our mm-hmm. Canadian border update from Eric, we're obviously recording this on Sunday evening, the 5th of September. And I'm very happy to say that the Canadian border clearly is still open because I've just been watching the Blue Jays give the Oakland A's a bit of a kicking. I was watching it on TV.
What a weekend that has been. I mean, you know, the Jays have scored. That's been a crazy series. I believe the Jays have scored at least 10 runs.
They've hit nine home runs, buddy. Nine home runs in the series.
They came back from a 9-run deficit in the eighth and ninth inning, and amazing comebacks and you know, fairly full stadiums, and you know, people can still travel in to the United States.
I really hope the Jays make it because they're a ton of fun, and I wouldn't want like a team like the Yankees to miss out. And I just hope that the Jays make it because they play entertaining baseball. And I love that there's another country involved. That always gets me excited. And let's have the Jays in the wild card. Can I get a witness for that, Johnny?
Well, will you rewind to last week when we were talking about who's going to make the wild card that isn't in the running at the moment? I think you may find if you rewind the tape from last week.
Do we have that tape available, Eric? No, probably not.
We know. And David said that he tipped the Blue Jays.
No, he didn't. I did. David did. You're absolutely right. I tell you what, I'm getting confused.
Even when they have no chance, just because I like to have other countries involved in baseball. More countries the merrier. We are an international podcast.
Apologize. Dave, I'd like to apologize for trying to steal your thunder. This is indicative of how ill I am. I'm sitting here remembering I wanted to tip the Blue Jays, but because Eric went to you first and you went with the Blue Jays, I had to go with someone else. But that was who I wanted to tip. Because what you won't remember, and this was the obviously predictions we made at the beginning of the season, yeah. I predicted the Blue Jays to win the AL East. So I'm obviously a bit gutted.
So hallucinations aside, it's all good.
Exactly. Well, obviously, do get involved with the Johnny and Josh show. Big up our social media as always. Plinkety plonk, I'm pointing at the bottom for some unknown reason.
Subscribe, click, like.
Yes, subscribe. Exactly.
Make fun of us. Other people, most people do.
Absolutely. And
To make fun of.
Our Twitter followers are on the charge, which is what I'm loving to see, and Facebook as well. At the end of the day, baseball is a family affair, and we want you to be a part of the Johnny and Josh show family. And if you want us to rename the show, because let's be honest, it should have some reference to Big Dave and Eric, who every bit of support.
No, it should. We can't have that.
No, we got to go down that route. I'm sorry. It's just not right.
The glue behind the curtain.
I feel very uncomfortable about it. And
Really? How uncomfortable do you feel?
On that note, Eric's got some trivia for us, Dave.
I do have trivia, interesting trivia, and trivia that I don't like because it deals with interleague baseball, and you know how much I loathe the interleague.
Get off my lawn.
Interleague play, interleague games, mixing, never should the NL and the AL meet until they get to the World Series, but hey, since 1997, we've been stuck with 300.
You know, sometimes you meet your wife in high school, and then you meet them later in college. It does happen.
Anyways, interleague has been with us since 1997. We is here to stay, unfortunately, despite my best efforts to try to get rid of it from the league. Bud Selig wouldn't listen. Manfred would listen. So we're stuck with interleague. But yesterday, I was watching the Tigers play the Cincinnati Reds, torn because I've tipped the Reds to be in the wild card. So they're just hanging on in there. But torn because I like the Detroit Tigers, if you haven't noticed. Now, Miguel Cabrera. Yes, second week in a row, we're talking about Miguel Cabrera. He's currently tied first for most hits in interleague play, meaning he's got most hits in interleague baseball games.
Okay.
He just needs one more hit to be the all-time leader in hits in interleague.
I see. Yes, thank you.
But he's tied. But with whom, gentlemen, with whom? Is it A, Derek Jeter?
I knew that was coming.
Is it B, Adrian Beltre?
Oh, okay. Who?
Or is it C, Ichiro?
Hey! He's back. I knew it was only a matter of time.
Jeter, Beltre, and Ichiro. That's the choice.
Jeter, Beltre, or Ichiro. Which one is Miguel Cabrera currently tied with for most hits in interleague play?
Okay.
There you go. So answer later on in the show. Moving on.
Hey, buddy. thank you for ringing that bell with such force. We lead off, as always, with the news roundup. And our first story is a rather negative one, and obviously with you on the show, Dave, we've got the perfect man to talk it out. But as if the world of Mets baseball fans wasn't already complicated enough, every time you do something good, it seems something awful happens in the background. And now Zach Scott, the Mets GM, has been arrested and has been put on paid leave by the club for suspicion as being suspected of driving under the influence, which, as we know, is a serious offence.
He didn't take the test, right?
I'm from a legal perspective, I'm just trying to make sure we stay on the right side of legal talk.
Because I wouldn't, so it's good you're here.
Yeah. But obviously, if on the assumption he is found guilty, how do you see this one panning out with the Mets?
First of all, the first GM we had this year was removed because of his sexual harassment contributions to baseball. So we had that already. And now the next one is getting potentially done for driving under the influence. By the way, in my hometown of White Plains, New York. So he's on the streets where I grew up. The Mets GM coming home from apparently a do at Steve Cohen's house. Steve Cohen's the owner of the Mets. Yeah. He was coming home. I guess he said, let's go get hammered at the boss's house and drive home. We've seen that show before, except, you know, usually it's not in the public eye. Not too bright. I don't really understand why people would drink and drive at the same time. It doesn't really make a lot of sense. Especially doesn't make sense if you're leaving your boss's house.
No, on every level.
What an idiot.
I've always taken drink driving unbelievably seriously. I don't understand how anybody.
The British are very serious. You know, one thing I noticed when I first went to the UK, the British are very, very serious about drinking and driving. And, you know, what the kind of informal rule in the States is have two drinks, stay a couple of hours and you'll be fine.
Yeah.
And when I got to the UK, most people didn't want to have any drinks. And if they did, it would just be one. And yeah. I was always very impressed by that, actually.
Yeah. But as you said, he's leaving his boss's house. Now, herein lies the question. Surely his boss and those there saw how much he'd had while he was there. So why would they allow him to climb into a car? I find that aspect of it really bizarre.
He could have been borderline. So there's a couple of things going on. Let's just say you're at your boss's house and you have a couple too many drinks. You don't want to go up to Steve Cohen and say, hey, Steve, you know, I'm a little slosh. Can I leave my car here? You know, that's not a great look either. The smart and legal thing to do would have been to say, look, hey, Steve, you know, I had a few too many drinks. I don't really feel comfortable driving right now. How do you feel about me leaving my my 1985 Toyota Corolla at your palatial multi-trillion-dollar estate? Is that okay? And he probably would have said yes.
We should point out, guys, I know you want to come in here, right? But we should point out he has pleaded not guilty to DWI misdemeanor and other charges. So as things stand, this is still not far from a open and shut case. Just for those who don't know the details, he was arrested at 4:30 in the morning. And I think part of the problem was he had also fallen asleep.
Right.
At the wheel of his car.
Tony La Russa. That's Tony La Russa's move. He loves falling asleep at traffic lights. That's his thing.
So he's allegedly stopping, standing, parking on a highway. He's being charged with disobeying a traffic control device. Not sure what that means. Maybe that means jumping a red light, failing to notify the Department of Motor Vehicles about a change of address. So it's not just simply a drink driving charge. There's a bit more to it.
What was that last one about address?
Failing to notify the Department of Motor Vehicles about a change in address. So obviously,
I need to do that also.
Yeah. So in the UK,
I recently moved, and I haven't changed my. Thank you for reminding me.
Yeah. No. And that's something they ask you to do in the UK immediately. But a lot of us.
Great. Now, Davey just announced that you can't drive until.
Until I get. Look, I still have a driver's license. Yeah. I have the wrong address on the driver's. I will do that right after the show. I'm going to do it online. Thank you. This is great. Thanks for having me, everybody. I'm out of here. Bye.
This show is a public service as well as baseball.
This
is
great.
Well, guys, I'm really sorry to have to tell you this, but the continued stories of the news roundup are somewhat negative at the moment. The next one is about Trevor Bauer. Now, I don't know if you're followers of the UK baseball community Twitter site, but they put up, or Facebook indeed, they put up a message saying that reports are now emanating from certain sources that Trevor Bauer will never play baseball again. I went online chasing this one up, and actually the reference they made is no longer available, so that doesn't look particularly trustworthy. Mm-hmm. But I then looked at other news stories, and I did find one that's suggesting that he will be banned for 2 years.
That was at Jeff Passan on ESPN.
Yeah. Yes, that's right. So, yeah. I mean, that's still pretty much a potentially career-ending situation.
I don't know about that.
Well, I mean, forgive me, but how old is Bauer?
I think he's 32.
Okay. Well, sorry, buddy, but he's coming back when he's 34, 35.
Being 34, he can't come back from that? If anybody would even sign him, who knows?
Well, one, your brand is, you know, and if he's found guilty, let's again point out, and this is another legal minehole, isn't it, that that he hasn't been found guilty of anything as things stand, but nonetheless, if he is found guilty, it is unbelievably important that baseball takes a very serious stand to any kind of domestic abuse.
I think the damage is already done. Keep in mind that you do not have to be found guilty in order for MLB to punish you in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah,
you know, there have been a handful of players who, you know, there was talk or there were like calls to the home of a domestic violence incident, and then the criminal charges were not processed, and MLB doesn't care about that. They're worried about sort of morals stuff. And, you know, Chapman never got arrested as far as I know. And they dole out whatever punishment they see fit. So it's important to keep in mind here that MLB, you're not going to need to see any kind of guilty anything for MLB to inflict their version of judgment onto this case.
Well, we should point out that a Superior Court judge, Diana Gould Saltman, dismissed the temporary restraining order that had been placed against Bauer. That was a couple of weeks back. And obviously his administrative leave, which is what he is officially on, was extended recently, mm-hmm. and presumably will be again for the eighth time later. Well, that's it.
He's going to get his full 40 mil. I mean, the season's just about over. So he's going to get his 40 mil. I don't expect this to be solved before. I tell you what, to be fair, if it's going to be solved, it'll probably be they don't want this going on during the playoffs. So they're either going to suspend them right before the playoffs or they're going to suspend them after the World Series. But I don't see it happening. Okay,
Hang on there. The Pasadena police, who are carrying out the investigation, okay, they have now presented the results of their investigation to the LA County District Attorney's Office, who will then obviously decide on potentially filing charges. If they decide there is no case to answer, if they decide, yes, it was consensual, yes, it perhaps got a bit out of hand, but ultimately, therefore, no law was broken, what then? The Dodgers are almost inevitably going to the postseason. He is considered one of their, you know, ace arms. What then? Do you, as a member of the Dodgers management team, do you bring him back? Well, or do you decide that this season really probably for the best of everybody?
He's not coming back. You know, I would be shocked.
Yeah, that's, you know, the worst thing is you don't want anybody, you know, anybody toxic in his dressing room, as they call it, or the locker room. Loads of Dodgers have sort of not come forward, but it is pretty known that he wasn't popular in that locker room at Dodger Stadium. So I don't think there's any rush to bring him back.
And you don't want to have this hanging over your head if he comes back and you're in the playoffs and every day is let's talk about Trevor Bauer.
100%. But guys, from a legal perspective, let me ask you this. He signed a record-setting three-year deal, $102 million contract, and that was only past February. So where do they stand if they decide we don't want him year two, year three? Do they have to pay him off? I mean, that is a $32 million option for the 2022 and 2023. So we're talking walking away from $64 million worth of wages.
Until we, you know, we find out the exact story behind the Pasadena police, we won't know. And of course, because Josh Chapman isn't with us today, our local resident legal mind with a lot of lawyer guy.
Yeah.
But he's off gallivanting with curling stones.
Curling instead of being here on the podcast where he should be. He's curling.
Do anybody know how he's getting on?
No idea.
He's got to the qualifier.
Okay. Okay.
So they made it through to the proper qualifier.
Not the proper qualifier to qualify.
You mean the qualifier to the... So again, we're talking about FA Cup minus fifth round?
It's the qualifying.
Qualifying.
To qualify. So hence why he's not
That's
here.
That's what he says he is.
Now
That's what
I'll, he says I'll he just is. Wield the first waffle because I'll stop talking about the qualifier first.
We don't really know what he's doing. He could be doing something else.
Yeah, he could just not want to be here. Okay, we need to round up the news roundup. There you go. We're rounding up. He's qualifying for the qualifier, and we're rounding up the news roundup. It's happening a lot at the moment. And this news item is entitled Wonderful. Franco, the legend, or the soon-to-be legend, since this is obviously his first decent season, extends his on-base streak to 34. Now, that was written yesterday. Right, I was about to say, that was yesterday. How's he gone on tonight, Sunday?
Today, he's on the verge of the streak being broken. That as a streak ending, beg your pardon. And on his last at bat, he got a base hit. So he made it on base. And his on base streak of Wander Franco is extended to 35 and counting. Whether he'll catch up to Frank Robinson's record of 46, hey, you never know.
But he's up there with Mickey Mantle now.
He's past Mickey Mantle. Exactly.
He's past Mickey Mantle. And again, he did it sober, which is great. And the Rays are hot right now. They've won again.
There's 30 games left in the season, so there's no reason why he can make it 65. Yeah, you never know.
Okay, we'll finish things off with the Badoo Watch. A view to Akil, our favorite player. How's he getting on this week, big guy?
This week, since our last recording of the show, yep. He won 5 for 22. Yeah, you know, it's all right. It's fine. Better. You know, hey, he got 2 home runs, got 4 RBIs, and he sat out 2 games. So you think about that. But here's the thing about Akil Badu. How hot and cold he is, though. The other day, the Detroit Tigers won 15-5. Yes, that's right. 15-5 against the Cincinnati Reds. Every single person in that lineup got a hit, at least. But Akil Badu went 0-4.
Oh, boy.
So even the 15-5 routing, he failed to get a hit in that one game. But, yeah, he got 2 home runs.
Right, second batter up. It's Hall of Fame time. One of the greatest experiences of my life. 2004, my trip to Cooperstown. And if you are a true baseball fan and you're ever over in the States, I do recommend that this has to be one of those sort of stopovers that you plan as part of your trip, because a visit to Cooperstown is an absolute must-do for all baseball fans. And I was very lucky to be there during the whole setup where I got to take in the Hall of Fame game, which that year in 2004 was between my Braves and the Minnesota Twins. I got to sit in the dugout. I got to chat with Chipper. I mean, it was just one of those great days of my life. And of course, we've got 4 inductees. Before I get to the other 3 boys, let's focus on the main man at the top of the pile. And that
Marvin
is, of
Miller.
Course,
I'm glad you started with Marvin Miller.
No, we can't start with Marvin Miller, as much as I love him. Oh. We're going to start with a certain Mr. Derek Jeter, Mr. New York.
Derek
Jeter. He was voted in the captain. First ballot, 99.75% of the vote.
He was
now,
so cute,
Dave.
He was so cute.
But even for you, who was the idiot or two that makes up the 0.25% of the voters who didn't vote for you, Derek Jeter?
Who was the smart, level-headed?
Oh, don't give
genius.
Me that, buddy. 14-time All-Star, 5-time World Series champion, World Series MVP, AL Rookie of the Year 96, 5-time Gold Glove Award winner, even though he wasn't particularly considered particularly good. No, it wasn't.
It's a matter of debate, I would say.
Yeah, but he still won 5-time Gold Glove, 5-time Silver Slugger Award winner, 2-time Hank Aaron AL Award winner, Roberto Clemente Award winner. We all know why you get that. That's not because you're a great baseball player, but you've got a great heart. Now, I know he got pissed off with me at the 2008 All-Star Game at the old Yankee Stadium.
And rightly so.
I'll forgive him that. The man is a total and utter baseball legend.
I know. And isn't it amazing that after all those accolades you just mentioned, that the thing he'll always be known most for is for giving gift baskets to women? After sleeping with them?
That's because you told the world about it and you won't let it go.
That's just amazing to think that is his legacy.
I didn't see that.
And say nice things about Derek Jeter? Is that what we have to do?
No, I didn't see that.
On his baseball reference thing about most gifts.
It's in the alternate page. You have to check
it out. All right, gotcha.
But Derek Jeter, obviously the captain, a Yankee icon, and a perfectionist, always obsessed with hard work. 20 months into his getting voted into the Hall of Fame, apparently he still hadn't gotten his speech just right. So this better be like the best speech in history. 20 months, Johnny? How long does it take you to write one of your shows?
I just make them up, buddy, as I'm going along.
You just make it up. This clown instinct. Is taking 20 months to write.
You're honestly not What's finding... Are you honestly finding criticism of...
What's in that speech, 20 months?
Because it's the most important speech he's ever made. This is the biggest, yeah. You going into the Hall of Fame as a baseball player is the ultimate achievement. For a rugby player, it's receiving your Lions shirt. For a baseball player, it's being voted by into the Baseball Hall of Fame. And you're going to get one chance to give a speech to say what
and
it means to you.
Nobody cares. Nobody remembers. Oh, do you remember anything from any Hall of Fame speech ever? Eric, you're good on this.
No, I am good at
this. Do you remember anything from a Hall of Fame speech ever?
I remember Gary Carter crying. I remember.
But you don't remember what he said.
If I'm going to an induction, if I get invited to the actual ceremony, I'd expect a speech. I don't speak thanks, and then off the podium.
I understand that.
But Dave, that's a ridiculous statement. 20 months. The fact that nobody remembers it in a year's time, it's not relevant. It's about the occasion. It's about the day. And that's exactly how Derek Jeter is approaching it. We cannot surely be talking about the induction to the Hall of Fame of a player that received 99.75% of the vote, and we're talking about his speech. Let's move it on. Clearly, we need to go to a player that you do like, Marvin Miller.
Marvin Miller is not a player.
Sorry, an executive, baseball executive.
Executive, yeah. Not just any executive, but the most important executive in the history of Major League Baseball players, because he is one of the most important figures when it came to players escaping the reserve clause and moving on to a free agent system, which has since netted players X amount of money, big number. That X is a big number. Thanks to their being able to go, you know, pick their team and go to the highest bidder should they wish. And Marvin Miller was the thorn in Major League Baseball's side for many years. When it came to Bowie Kuhn, who was the commissioner. When it came to Peter Uberoff.
Is this why you think it's taken this long for baseball to recognize
100%? I mean,
because he died November 2012, so we're talking 9 years ago. And we should point out that his access to the Baseball Hall of Fame was via the Veterans Committee, right. that have made this decision.
And who's in the Veterans Committee?
Veterans, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so players know what Marvin Miller is worth. But obviously other people didn't.
Well, Red Barber, the legendary American sports announcer, nicknamed the old redhead, said Marvin Miller, and I quote, along with Babe Ruth and Jackie Robinson, is one of the two or three most important men in baseball history.
100%. Now, wow. Absolutely correct.
I mean, Red that's Barber company, isn't it? Stuff. Babe Ruth and Jackie Robinson. I mean, that's as big a company there. He died at the age of 95. It saddens me greatly that he wasn't around to see his name added to the list
sucks,
of legends.
But it shows you how petty, you know, everybody over at baseball can be. I mean, whether or not you like the guy or not, you have to acknowledge his importance to the game. But, you know, those folks are incapable of separating, you know, facts from emotions. And, you know, obviously they're not the first people to do that. It's something we see in society all the time. But he should have been in there a long, long time ago, and I'm glad he's finally having his day.
Well, to give some perspective on it, during Miller's tenure as the executive director of the MLBPA, the average player's annual salary rose from $19,000, can you believe, in 1966, to $326,000 by 1982. And we all know the sort of money they're making now. So I hope the players remember the man. I hope the players nod at his successful induction into baseball's Hall of Fame. Great story. Absolutely love it. Okay, well, let's move on quickly. We've got two more to get. Ted Simmons.
Yeah. Ted Simmons is a good one. Go ahead, Eric. Tell me about Ted Simmons.
Ted Simmons. Now,
number 23 for the Cardinals, of course, and this is 23 episode.
Of course, the one thing I respect about Ted Simmons, now he was overlapped quite over a few periods where he caught Bob Gibson in his rookie year with the Cardinals, and then in his last season, he caught Greg Maddux and John Smoltz. just goes to show how long that career spanned.
Yeah.
But nothing really exciting happened for him while he was at the Cardinals until he went to the Milwaukee Brewers and helped them get to the World Series in 1982 against, lo and behold, the St. Louis Cardinals.
That's got to suck, right?
But he's being inducted as a Cardinal. Now, here's the thing. It's too bad Josh isn't here because he's, as we said, currently busy with the qualifier for the qualifying for the Olympic qualifier for curling. He would have been defending Ted Simmons because Josh being a catcher with GB and do I say renowned? Probably not. But Ted Simmons, you look at his numbers. Yeah, they're good numbers.
Yeah, they're good numbers. Catcher, go ahead. Yeah,
for a catcher.
Let's hear.
But if he gets in, that means you got to let in a whole bunch of catchers. Yes, catchers are it's the hardest position to play in all of baseball.
Very difficult. You get a lot of pains.
So now if he gets in, that means Jorge Posada will be a shoo-in when his time comes. And then you have to look back at the numbers of previous catchers who never made it. So Ted Simmons, borderline, yes, okay, let him in. But look at, give catchers more big ups if you look at their stats.
I understand what you're saying. His numbers at first glance don't look to be off the charts, but when you consider the physical demands of being a catcher,
he's a catcher.
Yeah, 8-time All-Star. Yeah. This is the bit that I like. This is the consistency of the man. His career lasts 20 years. 7 times he hit 300 or more batting average. 7 times in his career. So that's almost half of every year that he played. Caught 2 no-hitters as a Cardinal for twice led the National League in intentional walks. There's loads of numbers there. I mean, he was ranked, who was it by, in the Bill James Historical Baseball Abstract. The baseball historian Bill James ranked him 10th all-time of Major League Cactus. All-time. Number 10.
That's good.
The last inductee is quite special.
Who's that?
Well, it's Larry Walker.
Oh, Larry Walker.
Fine Canadian star.
You go ahead with Larry Walker.
Did you notice, Eric, I let you introduce that one? Because obviously he's a fellow Canadian.
Yes, but unfortunately he's not being inducted as a Montreal Expo. He'll be the first Colorado Rocky inducted into a Hall of Fame.
It's outrageous.
But here's the thing. Should there be an asterisk if the majority of your hits are in Coors Field? Mile High Stadium, as it was?
No, don't be ridiculous. No, absolutely
of course not.
No, because, of course, a lot of those hits were in the Olympic Stadium as well, wearing an Expos uniform, I like to add.
Eric, absolutely. If he didn't play in Colorado, you think he's going to make the Hall of Fame? Be honest.
That's what I was saying. Should there be an asterisk?
They're not going to do an asterisk.
How do you stay in Montreal's whole career?
It's a yes or no question. He doesn't play in Colorado. Is he a Hall of Famer? Yes or no?
Yes, he is.
No.
I didn't ask you.
Well, I'm giving you an answer because Eric was delaying. I'm saying yes.
Eric, now you've had a minute. You've had a half second to think about it. Eric, yes or no question? Walker in the Hall of Fame.
Even if you stayed in Montreal, he wouldn't. No.
See, everybody talks about the impact of elevating your numbers. And yet, if that was the case, then why did Colorado not win more often? Why are they not a much more competitive side?
In baseball, you have to pitch also. You can't just hit.
Not, absolutely. And you also have to defend. And as a player who is not a pitcher, you're not just hitting, you're defending as well. The man won 7 gold gloves. He wasn't just a hitter. He had a great defensive game as well.
That's
so
true. That's a good. That's a very good point, Johnny. 7 gold gloves.
Very true.
Thank you.
Good job. He had a lot of ground to cover out there.
Let me ask you this, guys. Arenado recognized as the best Colorado Rocky hitter of late. Yes, of recent seasons. True. I know he's now no longer there. He's moved to the Cards. Well, how often did he win an MLB batting award? Larry won it 3 times. I mean, how often is a Rocky in recent years been the NL home run leader? I can't think of a single one.
379. He had 379, Johnny, in 1999. That's
absolutely
crazy.
He was the NL home run leader in 97. I'm loving him. I'm loving Larry. Anyways, he's a proper sportsman.
Next week, we'll discuss about every single one of those 4 memorable speeches at the induction. Moving on.
Oh, God.
Okay, well, batter 3, and this is one that we've been having quite a lot of debate about. prior to the show, and that was an update on the Cy Young scenario, because I was talking to the boys beforehand and just referencing the fact that the odds that that's being offered out there, and there's often, if you go to Vegas and you look at the odds, it gives you a real insight to how people perceive across the pond what's happening in these races. The odds have changed massively. 2 weeks ago, Lance Lynn was odds on to win the AL Cy Young Award. He's now third favourite. Odds on is now Gerrit Cole. Robbie Ray has gone from a relative outsider.
Robbie Ray?
Yeah. Did you see him tonight? Oh, my God, he was good. But meanwhile, Gerrit Cole, who's always been there or thereabouts, has suddenly replaced Lance Lynn, who 3 weeks ago was odds on to win the AL Cy Young. And Gerrit Cole now is odds on to win it. Robbie Ray in second place. Carlos Rodon, probably the best story for the Chicago White Sox, in fourth, but a big outsider, 16-1. And Shohei, got to love Shohei. But yeah, you've got to take odds of about 22-1 if you think Shohei's going to win it. But when you consider what he's dealing with as a hitter as well as a pitcher, that is still extraordinary that he's even in the conversation. But does this not show, guys, that if you're playing fantasy baseball, and I'm sorry to go down that route because I know you both hate it, but does it not show you how tough it is to sort of predict the success of any kind of pitching staff? Preseason favourites, for instance, for the National League, Jacob deGrom was odds on, Darvish, Trevor Bauer, third and fourth favourite. Not even in the conversation anymore.
Well, deGrom did his part. It's just, you can't throw 115 miles an hour every game and expect your arm to stay on. I mean, but yes, things happen in the course of a long baseball season. I think that's what you're trying to say.
Yeah. Well, and it also amazes me that when you look at the, for instance, in the American League, the lack of repeat winners. I mean, it just astounds me. Literally in the American League, there hasn't been one for the last 10 plus years. They have had repeat winners in the National League. Jacob deGrom won 2018, 2019, Max Scherzer 16-17, and Clayton Kershaw 13-14. So the National League's been a bit more consistent. But
look, Gerrit Cole had his obituary written after the sticky stuff thing and was having a very hard time right after they started enforcing sticky stuff. And I hate to say it, but you have to give Cole, he has bounced back in an incredible way and has been a big part of this Yankees resurgence. And you have to give Cole a tremendous amount of credit, because people were saying he'll never be the same pitcher. And it took him time to figure out how to pitch without cheating, but it looks like he figured it out. And now that he's not cheating or cheating as much, he's bounced back. And I think he deserves a lot of credit for that. So good for him. And he's now, he may win the thing. But again, it's funny about the Cy Young. It's all about the journey. Nope. When they announce the Cy Young, nobody cares. He won the Cy Young. Nobody cares. It's all about the journey. It's all about baseball in season discussion.
Such a killjoy.
Don't you find that interesting? Nobody cares. It happens in November. Okay, announcement. Gerrit Cole's the AL Cy Young Award winner. And then it's like, no one talks about it. And they're talking about football. And that's it. we sit here, we worry about it for all these months. And then when it actually happens, nobody has any ink. Yeah, I always found that amusing. But I think Cole will probably win the AL Cy Young Award.
Well, certainly it's going to have to take a bit of an upturn for it not to happen. But having said that, Jacob deGrom was considered odds-on favourite. Lance Lynn was odds-on favourite only 2 weeks ago, and look what's happened. So we'll revisit this story. But the Cy Young, only one of many awards that Major League Baseball players are vying for. Let's ring the bell. Let's move it on to the seventh.
Ring on.
Thank you, Eric. Seventh inning stretch, boys. My favourite part of the show. Do you remember when we used to do Channel 5 Baseball? We used to actually stand up and have a stretch.
And I always had sweat underneath my armpit.
Yeah, it wasn't very attractive, I've got to be honest. But
it smelled good. It was good smelling sweat. I had put on extra deodorant before the show, because I knew it would happen.
Yeah. Right. Well, that's your view. Yeah. So, Baseball Book of the Week.
The Baseball Book of the Week. This week, I figure, we don't talk enough about owners of baseball, and one of the most famous, infamous, notorious, whatever you want to call him, he was just damn fun. And his name was Bill Veeck. That's right. Veeck as in wreck is the name of the book. And it's basically autobiography of Bill Veeck, who was in charge, who owned basically the St. Louis Browns. Who? Well, they moved on to become
who the were Baltimore the St. Louis Warriors. Browns, Eric?
Then he moved on to the Chicago White Sox, and he moved on to Chicago Cubs. And every place he went to, he brought fun. He's the one who invented the exploding scoreboard at Comiskey Park. He's the one who introduced a midget coming up to bat at the St. Louis Browns game. That's right, Eddie Goodell, all written about in this book, Veeck as in Rec. Now, when he, of course, when he went to the Cubbies as well, you think, how can an owner own the White Sox and then all of a sudden own the Cubs? That just be a big no-no. But hey, he was Bill Veeck, and I completely and utterly recommend the autobiography of Bill Veeck if you want to find out the fun side, the lighter side, and the hilarious side of ownership, owning a baseball team. There you go.
What is it about baseball that makes it such a great source of entertainment, not only in the world of film, but also in the world of books?
It's just such a romantic thing to scribe.
It takes us back to it's nostalgia. There's baseball. First of all, baseball like is almost as much about what happened yesterday than what happened today. And I don't think you see that in other sports like football. Like your football doesn't have that. I mean, first of all, when they made the Premiership, they eliminated all the records from the first division and they started their own Premiership records, which is ridiculous. Okay. So that already takes away your frame of reference. Like you don't even have that anymore.
Yeah. So that's a good point.
Baseball is all about, you know, yesteryear plays as just as much of a starring role as the current game does. And I think that lends itself to literature and it lends itself to film.
Eric, baseball cultural reference. What do you got for me this week, buddy? Tell me it's more music.
Johnny, let's face it. Because we got such a positive feedback on all fronts about how good the music has been on this podcast.
Yeah.
Even though, you know, when it's so bad, it's good. That's what I am. I'm so bad, I'm good. I figured that just for you, Johnny, you know, who's an Atlanta Braves fan, who respects and honors the great Hank Aaron, Henry Aaron.
My second favorite player of all time. Yeah. Yes.
And I figured that, what if I were to say, well, if you combine all that and with overtones of like, I don't know, Creedence Clearwater Revival-esque kind of.
I love Clearwater Revival, Creedence Clearwater
PCR
Revival.
PCR for short, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. What if I were to tell you that, and this is my David's favorite part of that. I went to my junk, my baseball junk.
Oh, here we go.
Yeah. That I had more Eric crap. Vinyl. Look at that.
Here comes Henry.
Here comes Henry.
Well, right? Can I just describe this for our viewers? Eric is holding up. Show. Can you show that again? Eric is holding up the 45 vinyl single of Here Comes Henry.
This is now,
viewers, no. Move over, babe. Here Comes Henry. By Bill Slayback. Who the hell's Bill Slayback, Eric? You may ask. Ask away.
Who the hell is Bill Slayback?
He was a Detroit Tigers pitcher in 1972, and then not very good. He only had a career 6-9 with an ERA above, Johnny's driver's license points. And
I'm gonna go three.
That's good.
They got white.
I thought it was six. Basically, when Hank Aaron was chasing Babe Ruth's record of 714, here's a little excerpt of what Bill Slayback recorded in a recording studio. Have a listen.
Yeah.
stirring. I love it. I love it. I know you're expecting me to say I hate it, but guess what? Anything to do with Hammer Hank, I love it.
You're a homer. You're just showing your homerness. I bet if this was another song, like a Babe Ruth song,
yep,
or a Bobby Valentine song,
so what?
For example.
So what? What are you going to say? What are you going to prove? 100%. 100%.
Here's the thing. Bill Slayback, it's the only song he ever recorded. It's the only hit, of course, he ever had. It charted in, believe it or not, Japan.
Oh, wow.
It made the charts in Japan.
Eric, can I just point out that you seem to be suggesting that Bill Slayback has not had a great life. He was good enough to play in the major leagues. Okay, he's no Hall of Famer. He didn't have a Hall of Fame numbers, but he got to the show.
He had a cup of coffee.
That's incredible. Yeah. And then he went off and actually had a record that made the charts. So he's actually achieved amazing things in his life even if it's in Japan. And we're now talking about his song on our podcast, which is listened to by...
Exactly. It's too many.
Literally hundreds of people.
Exactly. Yeah. We love you, Bill. And I am confidently predicting that even if our dear friend at UK Rays on Twitter, who makes constant references to how awful the music's been on this podcast, that even he will be celebrating alongside my good self with the fact that we're going to be finishing off with that at the end of the show. But before we get there, we've still got some other business to get through. First of all, trivia answer. Would you like to repeat the question for our listeners, Eric?
Yes, earlier I asked you that Miguel Cabrera is currently tied in first place he's one more hit to be the all-time leader in most hits in interleague games.
Okay.
So my question to you is, which one of these three is he tied with? Was it A, Derek Jeter? Was it B, Adrian Beltre? Or was it C, Ichiro?
You want to go first, Dave?
I think he's going to do Jeter just to spite me. I think that's the plan.
Well, you got to give him.
And then he knows I can't pick Jeter because I don't want to pick Jeter.
So who are you going
to
pick?
So I'm going to have to pick Beltre. The obvious thing would be Ichiro. But Ichiro, I mean, he played a long time. I'm going to go Beltre.
Adrian Beltre to David Langell and Johnny Gould will be going for.
Well, Ichiro had 3,089 hits.
Yeah, you should be Googling what I'm
doing. I'm not. This is numbers I know off the top of my head. Right. And Derek Jeter had 3,465.
Right.
Last week, I made the fatal error of thinking I'm not going with the obvious because you are just deliberately trying to mislead me, which, of course, was the answer. So this week, I'm not making that mistake. And I'm going to go with the obvious. We've already been talking about Derek Sanderson Jeter because he's obviously being inducted into the Baseball Hall of Fame on the basis that he had a 20-year career, and on the basis they had almost 3,500 hits, it's got to be the Jeep man for the most hits in interleague play.
Okay, well, in no particular order, we have Ichiro with 367 hits tied.
Maybe. Not looking good, Dave. He never mentions the winner first.
Is that true?
Yeah, never. Well, you're out of it, mate.
Okay, so
you're
Ichiro Ichiro has 367 interleague hits.
Okay.
Adrian Beltre, 366.
Ooh.
Derek Jeter,
400.
Derek Jeter, 364.
No! Damn!
It is Ichiro.
Always Ichiro.
Ichiro, well, until Miguel Cabrera gets one more hit, he is tied with Ichiro with 267.
I'm just glad it wasn't
Jeter. Hits. So,
nobody wins.
Love it. Love it.
I thought you went with Ichiro, Dave. I thought you went with Ichiro.
I went Beltre.
No, I went Beltre.
Oh, did you? Why did you go Beltre?
What do you mean, why? That's my choice.
Okay, not to worry.
Why do you like vanilla or chocolate?
Or semolina.
I hate semolina. Semolina, gooseberries, and rhubarb. Yeah, only three things I've never eaten in my life. Okay. Thank you very much for the trivia question, which, yet again, do you know, when you consider it's a 1 in 3 chance, you would expect me to get 1 in 3 right, because I could just go with option A every time, and
it's
bound to get
it. It's a shocking record.
It is a shocking record. It is
impressive. It's like when I took the SAT
test.
Which
is a good record, yes.
Okay, moving on. It's the mailbag, and as always, we'd love you to get in touch.
It's not really a bag, though, is it? There's no bag.
Well, it's a like, small pouch because we're not exactly getting a load.
it's like a mail envelope.
I'm going to focus on one person, an old friend of the show, an old friend of the podcast that we're very fond of, Jan Wallace. And Jan was took umbrage, Dave, with your New York Yankee rant when you referred, for those that missed it in the previous podcast, you referred to the Yankees as boring compared to the old Yankees. And her question after their recent victories and run of good form is, are they still boring now, Big Dave?
Yes, but they're better. But they're still better boring. And boring. They're not interesting. They're not an interesting team. I mean, it took Cashman like 2 years to figure out, you know, what has worked for the Yankees over the last 85 or 90 years or so, which is to have left-hand power hitters in the lineup. So they go out, they get Rizzo, they get Gallo. Oh my God, they start winning. Amazing. What a coincidence. I mean, they were so right-handed in a stadium, which, you know, it's hard to bat right-handed in Yankee Stadium because it's a deep, you know, Death Valley out and left. It's not the same Death Valley that they had before the remodel in 1974.
Yeah.
But it's still, you know, you're meant to be, you know, hitting left-handed and popping balls out of the Yankee Stadium, you know, little BS home runs. And that's how the Yankees succeed offensively. But Cashman let the whole shift thing get in his way. They saw, oh, everybody's going to be playing the shift on lefties. So there's very little chance, you know, to hit doubles or base hits because there's so many people in the field. And he got away from the Yankee strategy. And finally he said, oh, let's go, you know, get power hitters who can hit over the shift. And guess what? They started winning. So he finally figured it out. But I still think that they're extremely dull. And they're not, you know, the team now is the Dodgers. I mean, you know, baseball has moved on. The team to beat now is the Dodgers. They're the ones that spend the money. They're the ones that have the glamour. They're the ones to go out and get Scherzer and Trey Turner.
Yeah.
And Trey Turner.
Yeah. And I agree with you. That's a sort of trade deadline move that you expect the Yankees to make.
Yeah. I mean, they were good moves in getting Rizzo and getting Gallo. They were excellent moves, but it's not Scherzer and it's not Turner.
Yeah.
And the Dodgers have replaced the New York Yankees as the dominant do anything to win. I mean, they already won a World Series. They've won like seven NL Wests in a row. They've been to like two or three World Series in the last 4 years, whatever it is. And they're still going out and picking up Scherzer and Trey Turner. I mean, you know, they could be forgiven for taking the foot off the gas for a year.
Yeah.
You know, just to maybe get, you know, reload the minor league system or just take it easy and not blow any more prospects. But they didn't because they want to win now. Now every year. And the Yankees are not into that anymore. They don't want to win every year now. They're not. They don't have that same attitude.
So, Jan, if you're listening out there, Dave's response is yes, they are still boring. They're just better at it.
Yankee Walker, go ahead. So that's my answer.
But if you want to get in touch, don't forget you can do it either via Facebook, the Johnny and Josh Show, or on Twitter at Johnny and Josh. We'd love to hear from you, even if it's it doesn't have to be a question. It can be a comment, Instagram, it can be a shout out, Instagram as well. I never mention Instagram because even though I've got an Instagram account, I have no idea how to work it. So I really
Instagram's broken.
Yeah,
Tommy.
That's the thing.
My Instagram.
Why are we not on Snapchat? Because that's another one that's famous, isn't it?
And I guess no one wants to see Johnny dancing on TikTok either.
So. I've done one TikTok video.
Really?
My moves. Yeah, yeah.
How did it go?
I thought I was pretty good, but I don't know. Not at all. So, so get in touch. And don't forget, we've got some other podcasts for your delight. If fantasy baseball is your thing, then do join James Holden and myself on Behind Home Plate at BHP Pod is the Twitter handle. We'd love to hear from you as well for that. Very much a listener-driven show. And we are looking for new involvees of the Rookie League, our second Rookie League for next season. This year's Rookie League has been so successful. So if you've never played fantasy baseball, and always fancy to go, well, why not have a go amongst fellow rookies with a couple of guys that are going to take really good care of you and just have a great old laugh. So if you do want to get involved, do get in touch, courtesy of our Twitter handle at BHP Pod. One other show I want to tell you about is the Nat Coon Show, and that's at the NC Show. Nat, of course, the main man of the Ted Fred stable, of which we are a part. I'm going to point at the bottom of the screen again and ask Dave and Eric to do the same, because obviously that's where the like buttons are, the subscribe buttons are. We're on Twitter, we're on Facebook, we're on Instagram, we're on YouTube. Now that we got Eric back, we're actually on YouTube, which is why I was a little bit worried about appearing on this one, because obviously I'm looking pretty damn rough. Eric, what are you up to this week? You doing anything exciting?
I helped out non-league conference football, Dulwich Hamlet FC. Make sure you support your local non-league side is what I say, both men and women. That's what I've been doing over the weekend and next week as well.
You'll be excited to know, guys, I've got one job this week. Guess who I'm working for?
Who?
Tony Hadley, the legend.
Who's Tony Hadley? Is he related to Boo Hadley?
Yeah, come on, Eric, please.
No, Randall Bally.
Thank you, Eric. Thank you. Well, but also, not just a famous pop star, one of the nicest people you ever want to meet. He's got a charity golf day, which I'm not just working. I'm going to do the auction.
Do you play golf?
Or do I play golf. No,
is
I play golf.
Yeah, is that true? Golf?
Well, I do play golf. I play off 18. I don't know if that counts as being good. I have the ability. Mean? Well, I have an 18 handicap, which means I get a stroke a hole. So I'm very average. But
so wait, so Johnny, you're playing with Tony Hadley.
I'm not actually playing with him. I'm playing in his golf day, and then I'm working for him in the evening.
So is that true? Oh, come on, it's gold. Work with me. Come on, give it to me.
Is that a Spandau Ballet song?
Yes, mate. Yeah, you're missing. He's reeling off. He's reeling off a number of Spandau Ballet song titles. Well done, Eric. Absolutely. Okay, guys. Well, look, thank you so much for your time and your company, as always.
You didn't ask me what I'm doing this week.
Didn't I? I'm sorry, mate. No. I've got flu. What are you doing, buddy?
Nothing. I hate when you ask, too, because it just reminds me that I have no life whatsoever. So thanks a lot. Okay,
I'm so glad you took me back. Yeah. Well, that's it from all of us. Thank you for listening. We do hope you enjoyed the Johnny and Josh show. Don't forget, midweek, we'll be doing another episode of Behind Home Plate. That's with the legend that is Mr. James Holden. So we'll look forward to seeing you next week. And we're going to leave you. Since we're talking Tony Hadley, we're talking music, baseball music that Eric very kindly introduced us all to on this episode. We're going to leave you with the legend that is Bill Slateback. So move over, babe. Here comes Henry. Till next week, you take good care.